Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Now, there's a text message here from a listener about the children in schools, which says, I never had a concern about the schools going back as normal until the minister started telling us not to worry. Jen Hogan, parenting columnist with the Irish Times. Do you reckon has it come as a shock to many parents to discover that there may be a doubt about it being safe for the schools to reopen, but that there is reassurance from the government that don't worry, it will be able to happen that the schools will reopen?
Honestly, Matt, I don't think so. I think because we've been here twice before, and I know the situation is different. I know we have the vaccination programme now, and that it's likely all teachers and staff will be vaccinated, and I know that's all different. But there was still that thing when the summer holidays came around, that fear that we could still find ourselves back with some sort of delay around the return to school. So I think when that kind of news started to seep out, or the rumours started again, the rumour mill started grinding, it wasn't really a shock to parents. And Norma Foley coming out and reassuring everybody, yeah, I still, like, well, everybody appreciates it, don't get me wrong, it's great to hear this kind of strong message. But I think until we get our kids back, there would still always be that kind of underlying bit of doubt. But what if the terms and conditions, the extra measures are not considered acceptable? What if, for some reason, they're delayed again? I just think it's inevitable because we've been bitten twice before.
And when the children do go back to school, and I'm working on the basis that they will be going back because it was done positively since March, we got everybody back and it was very important. Hopefully as well, they'll be able to do things like extracurricular activities such as sports and drama and various things like that, which has been stolen from them over the last 18 months.
Hugely stalled. And actually, whatever about the sports which made a return in some form, the likes of the indoor activities, those extracurricular activities, they've been missing for a long time. Swimming lessons, I know, have returned now, but they were gone for a long time, so children are playing catch up there. But for some of the arts in particular, for any children whose interest is not in sports, they're still waiting, particularly because the indoor summer camps weren't allowed to go ahead. So some of those camps were cancelled. So getting back to doing the things that they loved, that hasn't happened. And that is something I think parents are holding on to. That's something they want to see happen because we need normality for our children. When we do need a plan, we need to see a situation where we're moving towards a more normal life for kids again, and that they can enjoy the things that they enjoyed before without worrying constantly about COVID or being stopped from doing things or having the rug constantly pulled from underneath them.
But then, of course, there may be the issue as to whether they're vaccinated or not. The government apparently is about to allow 16 to 18 year olds apply via the HSE portal. And then the National Immunisation Advisory Committee is expected to provide new guidance as to whether 12 to 15 year olds should receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Now, how divisive is this likely to be for many parents, do you think?
I think when we look at the adult uptake, I don't know that we'll necessarily see quite as high figures in children, not initially anyway, because there is nerves there. There are nerves there. I mean, it's a very different thing when you're consenting, particularly for the under 16s, you're consenting for a vaccine for somebody else. And particularly if you don't have a child who's vulnerable, it's a different situation if you have a child with an underlying condition. So I do think there will be some nerves there. I think what will really help is if we're told why we're doing this. And I think if we can have a decent information campaign which addresses concerns, because there are genuine concerns out there. There will always be those with anti-vax ideologies, but there are actually genuine concerns out there. And misinformation has taken hold. And I think if there was a decent campaign out there which addressed parents' concerns and allowed them to address their concerns and address their worries, perhaps they might be a little bit more open to it. But I do think it's really important that, that we're told why we're vaccinating children, because we've been told COVID is not a huge risk to them. So why are we vaccinating them? And a lot of experts seem to say it's because it's the only way we can get rid of COVID. It's the only chance we have to move on from this pandemic, and obviously to continue to protect our vulnerable, you know, with breakthrough cases. But also, if we want to get back to normal, we're going to have to vaccinate children. And I think maybe if people, if everybody's straight with parents and they know exactly what they're doing, they might be more open to considering it.
Let's bring in Professor Paul Moyna, Professor of Immunology at NUI Maynooth. How straightforward to you is this idea of vaccinating children over the age of 12?
It's a complex question, Matt. So far, the vaccination program has been fantastically successful in the adult population. And certainly, if vaccines are safe and can be shown to be safe in children as well, it certainly support that. I just think Jen mentioned there in terms of explaining, you know, why vaccines be required. And vaccines be required for two reasons. The first and by far the most important, to give direct protection to the person, in this case the child, to be vaccinated, that we give protection against the virus. If there's one positive thing from this pandemic, it is that children are reasonably resistant to the virus, at least in terms of developing COVID. So the benefit-to-risk ratio does decrease, does narrow as you go down in age. Slight concern as well in terms of, for example, with the RNA vaccines, and two RNA vaccines have been approved by the EMA for use in 12 to 15-year-olds. That's the Pfizer and the Moderna one. And these RNA vaccines, there have been some side effects in young men, boys, and this is this condition of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. Now, it is quite, it's not very frequent, it's probably around maybe 1 in 20,000, but when the EMA approved the Pfizer and the Moderna, in those studies, it was still a quite small study, so 1,000, I think, in the case of Pfizer, 2,000 children were administered for Moderna. Now, they did acknowledge, whilst approving it, they did acknowledge that that size of a trial was too small to pick up rare side effects. So some of these side effects, we are fortunate in some ways in the sense that some countries have already begun to roll out the vaccines to the children. So my own view is be very vigilant there and look to see what the incidence and frequency of that potential side effect is. So I would very much in favour in terms of if it can be shown that the benefit to risk ratio is clearly in favour of vaccine. But I think we need to be careful and the bar needs to be very high for children.
And Paul, should it be also the case, I mean, we're talking about secondary school children here from the age of 12 up, and I think maybe particularly given that fifth and sixth years, the ones who would be 16, 17 and 18 would socialise a lot, that there may be a feeling to try and give it to them. But is it going to be difficult, perhaps, do you think, to persuade the parents of those children who would have to give consent as they are not adults to go along with this? Because a significant number in that generation who have children that age may have been worried about the MMR vaccine incorrectly in the case because there isn't a link to autism because of a fake news campaign run by a disgraced doctor, Andrew Wakefield. Mm. But when you have other vaccines as well where you hear stories that it's going to be hard maybe to persuade that generation of parents to go along with this.
As I said, Matt, I think the most important thing in terms of the benefit of the vaccine would be in terms of if parents can see that it directly protects their child. If there's a risk associated with the vaccine, then that also creates hesitancy. So, for example, in myocarditis, even though that may be quite rare, and it should be said with the myocarditis, it seems to be mild and seems to self-resolve, which generally is fine when you begin to look at statistics. You know, but if that is your son, 12-year-old son, obviously then that's a different story. So I think we have to be clear in terms of articulating the clear benefits of the vaccines, and direct protection to children is important. When we begin to look at the benefits in terms of suppressing transmission of the virus, I think we're into a more complicated story then. Then we're looking at a situation where we're trying to get to herd immunity. And I think to try to get herd immunity with vaccines is going to be difficult, because if you look at how well this variant transmits and the efficacy of the vaccines, we're probably looking at the requirement to vaccinate 90-95% of the entire population. So I'm not sure if we're going to get that with vaccines alone. And unfortunately, we could be looking at a situation in the next month to a year where everybody is basically either vaccinated or infected by the virus. And that's probably how it's going to finish off.
Should there then be as well, Paul, do you think maybe a sort of a vaccine bonus in that if school children are vaccinated, they should then be allowed to attend school without wearing their masks, that they should have full sporting and other extracurricular activities, that they go back to normal as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I'd be careful. I'd be reluctant, sort of my own personal view on that. I'd be reluctant, man, in terms of it's almost sort of a sense of mandating, you know, the use of vaccines in children. So personally, I wouldn't be very supportive of that. I think we go down the road of basically saying, okay, we recommend that children should be vaccinated or should not be vaccinated. That would be my view, and not curtail, you know, access to education or whatever the extracurricular activities based on vaccination status.
That is an interesting point, Jen Hogan, because we've had an awful lot of dispute about unfair distinctions between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated amongst adults. But imagine what the fuss would be like if that then involved children.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a very popular decision at all. I think, you know, every parent, regardless of whether you agree with them, and, you know, I am very much in favour. You mentioned the MMR there. I know there are still, even now, even in 2021, there are people nervous about the MMR. They contact me and I'm always directing them to doctors. You get your advice from those qualified to give it. But if people have genuine concerns, making them feel that they have to go again, it's not likely to be popular. I don't think anybody would really subscribe to that, because most parents do what they think is best for their children. Now, that might not always prove to be the case initially, but it really would be better if advice was given, I think, rather than a mandate given. But at the same time, I do honestly think that if there was a bonus, some sort of a bonus, it would possibly encourage uptake. Now, that's not to suggest it's the way to go, but I do think it may actually encourage people to take it up. Because I think even recently I had one of my children with a close contact. Now, he tested negative in the end, but I got a taste of what the restrictions were like, having to have somebody in the house self-isolate. And if children go back to school and they're not vaccinated and we have recurrent cases or recurrent close contacts, and we have a few of them, we could have quite a large period of time that children are actually missing from school, particularly if there were a couple of cases in the one class. Even if they don't catch COVID themselves, their contact, and there is that risk. So it is still likely to be disruptive to their education, and perhaps that's even the reason why somebody might think about it. As well as, obviously, as Paul's pointing out, the actual protection that the vaccine would offer children themselves once it was proven safe and suitable for different age groups. But I don't think mandating it would be a popular decision at all.
Jen Hogan, parenting columnist with the Irish Times, and Professor Paul Moynagh, Professor of Immunology at NUI Maynooth. Thank you both for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.